I'd like now to welcome Donald Levering and Janet Eigner, poets. Donald is an NEA fellow in poetry, winner of many awards, and he is an environmental and human rights activist. His latest book is Algonquin's Planted Salmon. And Janet Eigner, she is a poet and psychotherapist. Her latest book is What Lasts is the Breath. And the two of them will be doing a reading together on Saturday, the 14th of September at 3 o'clock at Opposite Books in San Busco Center in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
So we're going to have each of you read some poetry and we can talk. And I was wondering, Donald, if you would start and just, you want to choose a poem to read?
Okay. Thank you, Mary Charlotte. This lovely rain that we're having, because of that, I'm going to read a poem about rain. And the reason I wrote it, or what triggered it, was I came across this fact that the average cloud weighs, you know, some hundreds of thousands of tons. And I got to thinking about clouds being heavy up there. It's called An Explanation. They say that clouds weigh tons. How they stay high is how humans, heavy with thoughts, keep from sinking right through the ground. Sometimes people quit thinking and float, maybe in a lake that's fast evaporating and replenished by springs, and the thought of all that circulating water is why there is rain. The thoughts become worries, the worries burdens, and drop by drop the sky falls, and people wrinkle with worry or with washing stains. As the big wheel of rain and evaporation turns, and the day becomes unbearably bright, like the clouds weighing tons being light.
Donald Levering. Now, one of the things that I noticed in reading your poetry, and I think this is a really important thing about poetry, about good poetry, is that you're coming from a place of knowledge and understanding of, for example, some things about science. And I think there's a real, I don't know, dialectic between good metaphor and good science somehow.
Uh-huh. I'm an omnivorous reader. I'm not particularly a scientist, but, you know, the world is a curious place, and I like to pack poems with some of that curiosity.
There's also a tremendous sense in so many of your poems of just close observation, and the feeling that I had was the feeling of slowing down to take the time to see, which you must have a practice of doing.
Well, I try. My practice of writing is usually I get up very early, and I write when everything is quiet so I can really concentrate and not have distractions. And then I think that, you know, poets have to pay attention to what's going on, even when you're not writing. And so I try to do that.
Do you just carry a notebook wherever you go?
Not always, but I'm pretty good about making a mental note of things and then coming back and jotting it down.
Do you think that getting up and writing so early in the morning affects the tone and feeling of your poems?
I think it's easier to be to have a consistent voice when there's absolutely no distractions.
There's a number of themes that come up in your poetry, like trains and mines and animals and destruction, and there's a sadness in a lot of those, and yet that sadness is kind of controlled somehow, or at least that's how I saw it and felt it. And I wondered, I mean, I was thinking about, like, sometimes if you see a play and the actor is emoting hysterically, the audience doesn't feel as much as if the actor holds back a little bit, and it somehow gives you room to feel. And I felt like, I wonder if that was active in your work somehow, that kind of...
Definitely, I believe that oftentimes less is more, and that you can have more emotional impact by just choosing the poignant observation or the very clear phrase that sums it up. That's what I try to do. Yeah, and yeah, the world is a curious place, and in the state that we're in now, there's a lot of sadness there with what's going on with species decline and environmental destruction.
There's an intense poem about Fukushima.
Yes.
Would you like to read that?
Sure. What I was trying to do in this poem was sort of mimic the fragmentation that occurred with this disaster. And with all disasters, there's this kind of fragmentation, and it gets into the language. And when people are panicked, they latch upon little pieces of news, and it gets repeated over and over and gets distorted. And so that's why if things, as I read this, it's not like a linear kind of writing. Fukushima. Deep earth rift, the massive catfish thrashes. Flower vase slides across table. Good God, wave wall breaches containment vessel. Operators waded into flooded control room. Rumor drifted over official denial. Ordered to evacuate, citizens abandoned, pets left behind, rain on tea plants. Failed to extinguish, melted through the floor, isotopes within 12 kilometers, tumors, political connections, power loss, prayers to the goddess of the hearth. Fishing ban, radishes recalled, jammed lines, lacking backup. Regret that regulations remain calm. Mother's milk, pumped seawater. Emission unintended, dosage unknown. Half-life fetus, falling teeth and hair deformities, quarantined. Soft-shelled turtle, white blood cells, turban snail. Refrain from eating all cattle within. Not to panic, spent fuel rods, hot spots, pressure buildup, press release. Cesium discharged into the sea, deliberate venting, unplanned explosion, uncertain exposure, predicted incidence of iodine absorbed, authority resigned, rebuild damaged marrow, cooling tower, rice sprouts, radium, radius, spinach, reactor restart, almond blossom offering, finned god of tsunamis.
Donald Levering from his book of poetry, Algonquin's Planted Salmon. And I was reading that poem and thinking of if you took all the various news stories and took out maybe the theme or a detail from each one and put them together in a crafted way. It's kind of what you got.
Yeah, it's kind of a collage, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also something in there about Japanese mythology that there was a belief that a great catfish under the sea is what caused tsunamis.
Ah, I was wondering what that catfish was.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Interesting. You're a poet and you're also an activist, and I wondered how you integrate your life with your human rights and environmental activism and your poetry and how those things kind of work together, if that's something that you can talk about.
I can try. I'm a member of Amnesty International, and I have gone to their conference, but mainly what I do for them is to write letters on behalf of political prisoners all over the world. Then I'm also a member of an organization called Earthwatch, and I've done some participation in species preservation projects, such as with turtles, the great leatherback turtles in Costa Rica, working on the beach. I don't deliberately like use the activist work in the poetry. It just, you know, it just crops up, and so it's just, they're kind of two aspects of my life that integrate in an informal way.
We're talking to Donald Levering, and let's turn now to Janet Eigner. Your new book is called What Lasts is the Breath, and this book is inspired by a very, very sad reality, which is the loss of a child.
Yes, 10 years ago, and from the day after my daughter died of an incurable brain tumor that we knew nothing about and that her small-town doctor had misdiagnosed as either sinus problems or depression, we, till the very end, had a great deal of denial, as well as her husband did, who really didn't want us to come. He was taking care of her, and she was, at that point, vulnerable enough that she just listened to him, so we weren't to come. Her husband finally called at the last minute and said, I can't take care of her anymore. Come, and somebody has to come right away. I was still working. I had to close up my psychology practice and get other psychologists, counselors to help my clients, and my husband hopped a train and got there right away, took her right to the University of Iowa Hospital, where her condition was diagnosed. And don't anybody, if you can help it, go to a hospital on a big holiday weekend. It was Labor Day weekend.
Oh, heavens.
The nurses didn't tell my husband that she shouldn't drink water because that might swell her brain stem and cause her to stop breathing, which is what happened the very next day. And I just didn't even realize how ferociously angry I was at the divine, at every circumstance, and I just started writing the next day. And I'm still writing, but I decided after 10 years I needed to put this book out. And it's got, half of the poems have these full-page drawings of
India ink. Did you do those drawings?
And those are Stephen Counsell's drawings,
oh,
who's
okay.
Part of Black Swan Publications, our small press. So he's a visual artist as well as a poet.
And yeah, they're amazing drawings.
It really deepens the poem in terms of its topic or its feelings. So so that's how it happened. And so I just tell the story fairly chronologically. What is amazing is that there was just so much solace from, of course, my extended clan family, from my wonderful friends, but also from every ethnicity surrounding us here in northern New Mexico. So whether it was the Catholic Penitentes or my friends at Santo Domingo or the Hopis, and it was actually a young Hopi mother who I chatted with, that Hopi, and she invited me into her home the day that her one-year-old son was having his hair cut and his naming for the first time. And Naomi died after that. And I asked her if she would help me edit a poem about what both Marnette and an elder, Lavinia, had told me about the Hopi concept of life and death, which is in the poem.
Would you like to read that?
I would. Let me see. Well, first of all, I just want to read the phrase, the Hopi concept of life and death. Lavinia said, at Hopi, we think the body is like a corn stalk. What lasts is the breath. Its moisture holds all creation. When someone dies and then real soon it rains or snows, we know their spirit has returned one last time. And I actually had that experience then. And the most poignant aspect of what happened after this book came out and I tried to reach Marnette, I didn't get an answer. Her mother wrote back saying Marnette had died a couple of years ago. And we went to Hopi and gave this book to her siblings and her mother. And they all gathered round while I read them the poem and showed them the line that she had actually contributed to the poem, the last line.
So do you want to read the poem, Cornstalk Mother at Hopi?
Yes, Cornstalk Mother at Hopi. Cold spring after the Hopi bean dance. We stand outside the Keams Canyon Diner with just met Lavina from Second Mesa. The cook hasn't shown up to open. He's feasted and partied all the last night. By the time he turns the key in the latch, we're past small talk. Lavina tells us her Hopi names. The cook leans on a customer's table and loudly complains. Hard luck with his car and girlfriend. Finally, food. Onto a saucer beside her plate, Lavina places bite-sized portions, egg, American fries, corn tortilla, bacon. For Masaw, the earth god, the death god, whose katsina brings rain. Each meal, she feeds Masaw's spirit, now that parents and husband are past. My heart's a sudden fit of fear as Lavina slaps her chest, coughs. She says, at Hopi, we think the body is like a cornstalk. What lasts is the breath. Its moisture holds all creation. When someone dies and then real soon it rains or snows, we know their spirit has returned one last time. From her dry cough, I think Lavina too is turning to husk, but she says, let's pray together, not cry.
Janet Agner, from her book, What Lasts is the Breath. How has the process of writing poems affected your ability? I mean, you're a psychotherapist. You work with people mm-hmm. who are grieving, presumably, mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. part of your work all the time. Mm-hmm. Has it helped, if I may ask bluntly?
Yes, yes. Actually, there's a large and terrific group of mental health workers here who deal with hospice and end of life and salving wounds of people who are grieving and working with the dying. And I have found that I've put into my own experience 4 stages of grief and have worked with, even though I retired about 5 years ago, I've continued being asked to read these poems, but to do it in a sharing circle, so that I will read a couple poems from the first stage of people having intuitions or knowing that their loved one, their beloved, is ill and may be dying or is dying. And then I have a second stage of poems that have to do with how difficult it is just going through the process of the ceremonies, the rituals, the decisions. And at each of these stages, I read a couple of poems, and then I ask the people who are surrounding, and they tend to be, particularly Denis Cope does a Santa Fe Open Doorways, yeah. And once a month that she gets a group together, and there's just a lot of sharing on these topics. So then I ask those people who come, and often they're people who have lost children, and they are workers at end of life, and they will. I ask them to briefly share an experience or a poem or a prayer, or a music that has helped them, and then the third stage I've found is the days and months and years of just being alone and having these memories and this grief that just, it's one of my mentors, Morgan Farley, once said, you know, you've had a depth charge, and talking about what that experience is like. And it is the pain is body and soul. And so we talk about those years, and I have a lot of poems from so many different cultures that have been just so soothing. And then the fourth stage, the renewal part that has to do with how very joyful grandchildren, the births, and just the walk back into life where grief is not in the forefront. Not that it ever goes away, but people are changed and deepened in their understanding, I think, of life by that.
Janet Eigner's new book of poetry is called What Lasts Is the Breath, and Donald Levering's latest book is Algonquin's Planted Salmon. The two of them will be reading at Opposite Books in San Busco Center in Santa Fe tomorrow, Saturday, at 3 o'clock. Donald Levering is an NEA Fellow in Poetry and winner of many awards. He's also an environmental and human rights activist. Wish we had more time. It's been great having both of you on the air. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you
being
very
here.
Thank you, Charlotte.